morning, Truth Seekers. How are you tonight? Huh? Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're going to hang out with us for a while here at the Molloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, we are the program. We are is. Let me start all over. Oh my God! In about half an hour, I'll be reading the complete text of the Declaration of Independence. I don't know why that was so hard to get out. With a little musical accompaniment. This comes as a result of a request from a listener in Seattle the other night, Jude, who I met when the last time we were out there for the Seattle radio station's event. Hartman was there, and who else was there? Stephanie and the Young Turks and me. There's one other person, I just can't think who it was. Oh, well. And after the event was over, we had a great, great time at that event. After it was over, we came outside, some of us who were on that panel, and standing outside were six or seven women holding white roses. And they represent an organization called Women Standing. No, there's no website. And they gave a couple of us the roses, and we went on. So I got an email from Jude last night requesting a reading of the Declaration of Independence. Now, hearing me announce last night that we were going to read it, TPM sent me an email and said, "Hello, Mike, I fully support your intent to read the Declaration of Independence on the air. Many people may need a reminder of why our nation's founders felt it necessary to separate from Britain, particularly those who don't realize that the Declaration of Independence was intended to separate from religious repression, not to propagate it. Please remind your listeners that the Declaration is not a legal document that governs our nation. The Declaration has no authority over our laws, our lawmakers, or our persons. It cannot be cited as precedent or as being binding in a courtroom. Our nation's framing document is the Constitution. U.S. laws and policy must adhere to those articles set forth in the Constitution. Please remind your listeners that the Constitution is our national legal precedent, and that each and every attempt to erode this document without amendment through the process of amendment specifically dictated in the Constitution are illegal. A reading of the U.S. Constitution with an explanation of each constitutional violation by this administration, described in detail, would be truly enlightening to anyone who is willing to listen. Thanks. I'll keep it lit. TPM." That would take forever for me to even attempt that, TPM. It's a great idea, but I don't know. We'd have to devote a week to reading the Constitution, how we decided to govern ourselves and the amendments to that Constitution, and how the Bush crime family has thoroughly destroyed that idea. And remember, Bush referred to it as a, quote, goddamn piece of paper, end quote, the U.S. Constitution. It's astonishing. Can you imagine during the term of office of Bill Clinton if he would have said something like that other than, "I didn't have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky"? Imagine if he would have referred to the Constitution as a, quote, goddamn piece of paper the way Bush did. The verdict is in on the British school teacher in Sudan. She was convicted today of inciting religious hatred for letting her pupils name a teddy bear Muhammad. She was sentenced to 15 days in prison, no lashes, and deportation to Britain. She has about 10 days left to serve of the prison sentence. She could have gotten 6 months in prison and 40 lashes and a fine because her students chose to name a teddy bear Muhammad. And the school teacher, a British subject, citizen, allowed it to happen. In London, the British Foreign Office said it was, quote, extremely disappointed with the sentence, end quote, adding that Foreign Secretary David Miliband had summoned the Sudanese ambassador to explain the verdict. Well, I could do that for you, Mr. Foreign Secretary. It is a verdict that is a result of religious nutballs trying to somehow maintain their psychotic control over the hearts, minds, and attitudes of people. We do it in this country, and as a matter of fact, it's done in Britain, too. It's a little more subtle and not quite as overt as a possibility of 40 lashes, but the Christian faith states just simply and categorically, if you don't accept their Messiah as your Messiah, your ass and the rest of you, metaphorically speaking, will burn in hell for all eternity, which I think probably is equal to or greater than 40 lashes. So, yes, let's have the Sudanese ambassador come in and explain what the hell is going on here. But at the same time, Mr. Foreign Secretary, remember that your country has an officially established religion, of which the king is the titular head, the Church of England. Talk about separation of church and state. Ha 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 ha. Now, the school teacher, Jillian Gibbons, was arrested a few days back after complaints to the education ministry that she had insulted the Prophet Muhammad by applying his name to a teddy bear. Now, what is interesting about this to me is that the name Muhammad is very common, like the name Jesus or Jesus is in the Spanish language. Muhammad and culture. Muhammad is a very common name in Muslim or Arabic culture. Imagine how many Arab men, or Muslim men, I should say, who are named Muhammad, who have committed crimes, who have defiled the name of the Prophet. By naming a teddy bear, the children, and under the demonic leadership, apparently, of Jillian Gibbons, had committed blasphemy. The principal of the school, director, it's the Unity High School where Gibbons taught in Khartoum. I believe it's in Khartoum. The Unity High School, which taught Christian, Muslim, animist, take a guess as to how many different religions and non-religions of the students that attended that school, how many religions were involved there. But the director of the school said, quote, it's a very fair verdict. She could have had 6 months in lashes and a fine, and she only got 15 days in deportation, end quote. She only got 15 days in prison and deportation because she allowed her children to name a teddy bear Muhammad. Now, of course, this is the Pat Robertson, late great Jerry Falwell, psychotic Richard Roberts, mind-blowing, just go down the list of these religious, the Christian freaks in this country. It's their school of religion that would apply if they had their way in this country. I'll tell you what, one night of listening to this program under the sort of restrictions, I don't want to call it government, that applies in the Sudan, one night of listening to this program in this country, if we were led by President Pat Robertson or perhaps even President Mike Huckabee, who knows, would result in, I guess, I don't know, how many lashes would I get, Kathy? How many lashes would I get? Now, there's a mitigating factor here, of course, and that is if someone is sentenced to lashes for a crime against Muhammad or Islam or the faith, the person administering the lash has to hold a Quran under his arm, the hand that is holding the lash, which is somehow supposed to restrict, to some degree, the force and intensity of the lash. Wonderful idea. Beat me with a Quran. Repent.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
It's about 21 past the hour. More news about Giuliani. What a thug! I mean, what a true criminal. He doesn't commit necessarily just criminal acts. That's a poorly worded sentence. What I mean to say is, not only does he commit criminal acts, he thinks like a criminal. His smallest actions are those of a mafia type, or a criminal of some sort. I use mafia because we're all familiar with Sopranos, and after all, his name is Giuliani, right? The latest example of this is how he handled his mistress, Judith Nathan. Not only did he make frequent trips out to her pad in Long Island for, well, whatever he made the trip out there for, and then billed the services of his security detail to obscure city agencies where Giuliani figured nobody would notice. You see, that's the mind of a criminal working. But not only did he do that, and there are huge, big things that he's done too, but I'm talking about the little petty stuff. He also provided a police driver and city car for his mistress, Judith Nathan. That's according to former city officials who have gone on the record and talked to ABCnews.com, the blotter section. One former city official who worked for Giuliani said she, Judith Nathan, used the police department as her personal taxi service. Now, this is the kind of corrupt thinking that Bush, Cheney, Paul Bremer, the people who were involved in the rape of Iraq, after the shock and awe of the bombing and the destruction, Paul Bremer came stomping in his combat boots, saying, "Iraq is open for business." Now, Naomi Klein has spent an awful lot of time talking about this, disaster capitalism. If you haven't read her book, if you haven't read her essay in Harper's Magazine or various columns that she's written about, including the New York Times, about this weird, wonderful way of doing business, disaster capitalism, you owe it to yourself to find out. But in order for it to work, there has to be an underlying criminal mind at work. There has to be. Disaster capitalism is nothing about helping people recover from a disaster. Disaster capitalism is all about bringing something, a society, an economic system, a nation, a country, absolutely to its knees through an act, either a natural act like the tsunami that hit Indonesia or the bombing that hit Iraq, bring it to its knees and then privatize everything because the government will be incapable in a state of shock. It will not be able to respond. And there's billions to be made and stolen in such a scenario. Giuliani, being the little pimp that he is, could not see, unless he gets the office of the presidency, the broader picture of how to steal or have his friends steal, as George Bush has, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. Giuliani, thinking like some two-bit, tiny-ass mafia don, or some capo trying to work his way up through the ranks, Giuliani made sure that when he was the mayor, his hoe had a police driver and a car. Always. It's yours, baby. Hey, huh? You like that? It's yours. I'm the mayor. What do you want? What do you want? You want something else? What else you want, huh? And this guy wants to be president. Now, I wonder how long it's going to take before the other dwarves that stand on the stage of these toy, fake, ridiculous debates, when they're going to start calling Giuliani on the Bernie Kerik connection, on the Judith Nathan connection, on his absolute flaunting of his marriage vows, of forcing his children to watch the hoe come sneaking in at night and sneak it out during the day, of using taxpayer monies to transport the hoe around town, of going out to visit the hoe and then billing all the expenses involved in those little trips to various obscure minor city agencies. I wonder wonder how long it's going to be, and I wonder how long it's going to be before Pat Robertson takes back his endorsement. Huh? Well, we know the answer to all of those questions, don't we, Truth Seeker? Now, what did Giuliani say today? Giuliani said today that the details starting to leak out is nothing more than a, quote, pre-debate hit job, end quote. Hit job. More mafia terminology, more crime family, more street jargon. It's a hit job.
Man, hey, what? She's my chick, man. She's my woman. What do you want me to do? Huh? What? What's the problem here? What's up with all this nonsense? Hey, Goomba, come here. Explain to these schmucks what I was doing, right? Now, I gotta go. She's my... You know, I'm married to her now. What do you want from me anyway, huh?
Load of us things ain't been the same. Sick of blues walking a town. You want it, I'm gonna have it, cause you got that. Shotgun shine, shake my body. Don't.
It's about 26 before the hour. All right, again, Jude from Seattle sent me an email last night, I believe, and suggested that a reading of the Declaration of Independence, which is not, as pointed out here by email that I just read, is not a legal document. It's not something upon which we base our laws. But it was a statement of the refusal of the people who colonized America from Great Britain, that their refusal to continue to acquiesce to what King George was doing. Now, setting aside, if it's possible, the cultural genocide that was about to occur on here on Turtle Island, if that can be done, if we can just listen to what these people had to say and to whom it was being directed and how it applies today, there might be something in here valuable for all of us. The complete text of the Declaration of Independence. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms in which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient suffering of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former system of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation, till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing, with manly firmness, his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the law for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without consent of our legislature. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond the seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing a free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging the boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule in these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever, he has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burned our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, dissolution, and tyranny already begun, with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attention to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, and in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connections between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Powerful stuff. And thanks to the John Williams version of Fanfare for the Common Man. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 10 before the hour. No, we're not going to push it. Just, you know, it came in as a request, and it's been a long time. It's been 45 years, 48 years since I read the Declaration of Independence, which is now 236 and a half years old. But it is still stirring. It really is. The what I would call the preamble, the declaration of what free people are after, what they feel they're entitled to, and then the list of acts of tyranny against that free people, and then, of course, the decision that enough is enough is enough. And the utter requirement among these men, white men, who signed this declaration. And, you know, it was an act of utter and absolute treason against the crown. I mean, come on. This is, you know, it's hard as hell for me to go down to the federal building here in Atlanta on a Saturday afternoon to protest the latest outrage of this Bush crime family. It's all I can do to get my ass out of the house and go do it. These people were declaring themselves enemies of the state against the British, by God, Empire. Took a lot of courage, and the eloquence, I think, the eloquence of this document is found in its simplicity. It's just, boom, here we go. Hello, King George, you're an absolute ass. We've had enough. Adios. Catch you later. Maybe. So it... It is a powerful document when to me and possibly to you when you consider the subsequent acts by these men in what was from that point on the United States of America. And of course I'm looking at history with blinders on in this particular moment. Of course I am. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm only looking at the honor and the glory of you know, I'm looking at Turtle Island as if it existed in a complete vacuum. It was uninhabited, just waiting for people, white people, to come here with no intention of dragging black people with them for slavery. Nah, I'm looking at it through those glasses that say, no, okay, you know, the history is what the history was, but for just a moment... When I read that document, I can step outside that history and think, okay, the intention was thus and such, and I understand what the road to hell is paved with, those very intentions. And I also understand that it took damn near 180 of the subsequent 236 years just to bring people of color up to an equal standing. It took a long time just to bring females up to an equal standing. Or non-landowners. I understand. You know, a bunch of dead white men made this declaration. But when you look at it in the context of what it represented at the time and what the possibilities were and how it has been utterly stomped on by the Bush crime family, by the Republican Party, by these cretins who infest the United States Congress, most of whom are Republicans, but a damn good lot of them are Democrats. When you look at how that declaration has been turned into almost a joke by the behavior of the people to whom it was handed for their stewardship. When you look at that daily, because of what we have to absorb as news, then it becomes quite clear, to me anyway, that we are so far off track as to render the Declaration of Independence, or us, cartoonish. And that's scary. In addition to being just goddamn sad, that is scary. So anyway, thanks a lot to Jude in Seattle who suggested this. I've also gotten some suggestions from people to spend some time reading the Constitution of the United States. I don't think I can. That's a legal document. It would be interesting from a scholarly point of view, maybe. But it is written in legalese of its time. And the amendments, while trying to stay with that original language, are also written in legalese to an extent. My suggestion would be for people to read it themselves, to read it and take note of how the Constitution has been so violated. That is the, quote, goddamn piece of paper to which Bush referred. So, anyway. What I would like to, I'll tell you what I'd like to see. Some enterprising person take that reading and that music and put some sort of video with it. The possibilities are endless. I don't have that ability or skill. And put it up on YouTube. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see it. And not because I read it. Anybody can read it. Anyone can put music to it. But because I don't think it's out there right now on YouTube. So I would hope that somebody will, God knows, people have taken some of the more embarrassing things I've done and put it up on YouTube. Put this one up. Somebody put this one up. I'd love to see it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, a report card on the war on terror, thanks to L.A. Times. It's very quick and very brutal. And a couple more topics we've got here tonight, and then on to your phone calls. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. By the way, today is the 60th anniversary of the UN General Assembly Resolution 181. It was not a declaration of independence for Israel, but it was the day that this resolution was passed that divided that country into two states, one Arab and one Jewish. The state of Israel, as an independent state, they did not declare their independence until May 14th, 1948. But so 60 years ago today, the division of Palestine occurred into two states. And still going on, huh? Primarily because the Brits said they couldn't handle it anymore. And they couldn't. They were being relentlessly attacked by Jewish groups that were determined to drive the Brits out of Palestine, and they succeeded. Are we safer? According to L.A. Times, somebody sent this to me a little while ago, we have more than 6 years of experience with the Bush administration's war on terror, and there's not been another terrorist attack on U.S. soil, but can the administration take credit for that? Here's a report card on what the administration's counterterrorism strategy has achieved and what it's cost. And the figures I'm going to cite for you here are drawn from official government sources, institutional reports, and the LA Times' own continuing review of data. Well, not LA Times, but David Cole, who's a professor of Georgetown University Law Center, and Jules Lobel, professor of the University of Pittsburgh Law School. They are the authors, together, of Less Safe, Less Free, Why America is Losing the War on Terror. Now, they cite, first of all, worldwide, the number of terrorist attacks. In 2001, there were 1,732. In 2005, there were 4,995. And last year, there were 6,659. So that number has quintupled. In Iraq, the average daily number of insurgent attacks. In July of 2003, 16. May through July of 2007, 161.6 daily. Regarding Guantanamo and these so-called black sites, off-the-book sites where we do our torture now, the number of people detained at Guantanamo since January 2002, 775. The number of detainees released, 470. The number of detainees tried for any crimes, zero. The number of people estimated to have been detained in CIA black sites, secret prisons outside the U.S., 100. The number of those detained who have been charged or convicted of any crime, zero. Here at home, the number of terrorism or terrorism-related, quote, 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 convictions and guilty pleas claimed by the Justice Department as of June 2006, these are convictions with an international connection, 261. The number of those cases actually involving attempted terrorist activity, 2. The minimum number of foreign nationals preventively detained in anti-terrorism initiatives in the U.S. in the first 2 years after 9/11, 5,191. The number of those convicted of terrorist crimes, zero. The number of U.S. foreign residents who complied with domestic registration programs targeting immigrants from Arab and Muslim countries. The number of people that complied, 83,519. The number of those convicted of terrorist crimes, zero. The number of foreign nationals the U.S. Justice Department claims to have deported in connection with 9/11 investigations, 515. The number of those deemed to be connected to terrorism, zero. The number of al-Qaeda cells discovered in the U.S. since 9/11, zero. It's astonishing. Now, you can find this if it's in the Sunday edition, November 18th. What is that, Sunday a week ago? L.A. Times on the opinion page. The title is, Are We Safer? Now, it is footnoted, giving the source and commentary for all those numbers I just gave you, all those stats, so you can check it yourself, you know, do your own research. Most of this, as I just quickly scan it, most of those numbers come from U.S. government sources. So if the numbers are stacked or fudged in any manner, they're fudged to make the Bush crime family look better than it actually is or could be in whatever parallel universe you want to place it. So check it out. Are We Safer? Report card on the war on terror. Unbelievable stuff. It doesn't say in this report how many rights guaranteed under the U.S. Constitution have been abrogated by this group of thugs, clowns, miscreants, and bastards. Maybe because nobody totally knows yet. Speaking of terrorism, this is kind of unnerving. Firefighters in major cities are being trained to take on a new role as lookouts for terrorism. Firefighters. Now, this obviously raises concerns of eroding the standard, the standing, I should say, of U.S. Firefighters as icons, plus the fact that it just might infringe on a person's privacy, do you think? This reminds me of what Bush told the lobster fisherman to do. Or the telephone linesman, or the mail, the post office, what am I trying to say, the mail carriers after the attack on this country. And to the last organization, I believe, all those groups said, no, thanks, we'll pass on that one. See, the thing is, unlike police, firefighters and emergency medical personnel don't need warrants to come into your home or your building. So this puts people in those professions in a position to notice things. Now, if this reminds you of Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, maybe it does. There are fears that a public that has been jerked around by these rat bastard Bushies for 7 years now, but especially on the stereo. Remember the color-coded terror alerts? Whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to, what do we used to call them, Kathy? The candy, the roll.
Rainbow Ridge's Lifesaver of Terror.
There you go.
Had the great big hole in the middle.
That's it. Remember all that stuff? There are fears that firefighters might, if they go along with this, could lose the faith of an already skeptical public by becoming the eyes of the government. Now, keep in mind, the firefighters are already trained. They're already trained. They know what to look for when they go into a house, but they don't go into a house to infringe on somebody's liberty. If they walk into a house and see a stack of RPGs or hand grenades or fully automatic military assault weapons, well, hell yes, they're going to tell somebody. But that's not what these people are being asked to look for. They're asked to gather intelligence. For example, they're told to be in the training programs, one of which goes on here in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area. They are told to be alert for a person who is hostile, uncooperative, or expressing discontent with the United States. That would be this house. My God. Discontent. They're also told to watch for little or no furniture other than a bed or mattress. What? Maps, blueprints, police manuals, training manuals, flight manuals. Turn them in to Homeland Security. Turn them in. Turn them in.
I'm a little frightened about getting on the computer.
Twenty-one past the hour, as part of this firefighter program, the Department of Homeland Security. This started last December. Figures, we're just hearing about it. Homeland Security gave secret clearances to 9 New York fire chiefs. That's according to reports obtained by the Associated Press. Secret clearances to do what? This is going on in Washington, D.C., Phoenix, Atlanta, New York. Those are the only cities I see here. Oh, my God, firefighters, huh? The CNN, which really is chicken noodle news, that's what we used to call it back in the day, CNN chicken noodle news, and it kind of matured, kind of got away from that, and now it's you know, Fox Jr. CNN and YouTube billed last night's Republican debate as one in which you ask the questions of the candidates through videos you submit on YouTube. After the Democratic debate in July with the same format, Steve Grove, who's YouTube's news and politics editor, said the debate was, quote, more Democratic than ever, end quote. Of the almost 5,000 video submissions for the Republican debate, CNN chose to pose 34 of them to the candidates last night. And instead of allotting all the slots to ordinary citizens who don't normally have access to politicians, CNN gave airtime to a question, and I didn't see this, from Americans for Tax Reform President Grover Norquist. Now, you probably know Grover Norquist. He is a right-wing freak of the Mussolini type. You know, make the trains run on time. Get rid of anything in the way of corporatism. Stand back. So he got to get his question on there. He's a powerful right-wing Washington insider, it says here, with no shortage of access to the candidates. He was deeply involved in the unethical and secretive K Street Project, which helped foster the culture of corruption in Washington. He was close friends with fallen lobbyist Jack Abramoff. In July, he received an exclusive meeting with Karl Rove to discuss the administration's Iraq policies. Ironically, Florida Governor Charlie Crist, who's a Republican, also submitted a YouTube question. CNN rejected it, arguing that Crist, quote, has regular access to politicians, end quote. The question from DNC Chairman Howard Dean was also turned down. The one submitted by Senator Chris Dodd also turned down. But they allow this rat bastard neo-fascist Grover Norquist to get his two cents worth in again and again and again. Believe me, CNN is Fox Jr. It really is. Yeah, I know. Henry Hyde is dead. He was 83, died early this morning. He had been ill for some time, had open heart surgery in July. I'm not going to say anything nasty about him because, as far as I'm concerned, he really was kind of an Orwellian non-person, except for the fact that his hypocrisy was monumental. He was one of the people who led the charge. As a matter of fact, he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee that led the charge against Clinton with the articles of impeachment. It was Henry Hyde who led the other moral midgets across the Capitol Rotunda from the House side to the Senate side to present their evidence for the trial, at which Chief Justice Rehnquist decided to look like a Gilbert and Sullivan clown by dressing up his robes with gold trimming. Do you remember that? Oh, my God. Gag me with a constitution. The other claim to fame, Hyde had as much double dealings and fraud and graft and corruption as any politician from Illinois or any politician from from the Republican Party. Any politician anywhere has the potential, but Henry Hyde took full advantage of it. He was I don't know what the right term is. He wasn't a charter member of the Knights of Columbus. That goes back several millennia or centuries anyway. But he was an ardent member of the Knights of Columbus, a Catholic to the point that I wouldn't be surprised if the German Pope doesn't suggest to Henry Hyde be at least, if not turned into a saint, at least beatified. He was a member of the Knights of Columbus. He really believed in the sword and the cross, in that order. And he was also an adulterer. When he was in his mid to late 40s, he interrupted the normal dealings of a family in Illinois, absolutely destroyed it, caused the husband and wife to get divorced. The children were scattered to the winds. Henry Hyde had to have his poontang, so he decided to have an affair. And he violated his precious Catholic oath of marriage. Just unzipped his fly and urinated all over it. In the church is where he got married, but it didn't matter. Like so many of these guys, if the occasion presents itself, later he was to claim that affair was a youthful indiscretion. And he was, what, 46? Henry Hyde died today.
This is Laura Pigglesbush,
When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
It's about 26 before the hour. I got an email here from Brian. And I Slop Mountain College, Maine. Slop Mountain College, Maine. Okay. Slop Mountain College in Maine. Anyway, Brian writes, good evening, Mike. In your explanation a few days ago of why you think Ron Paul is a whack job, you said Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe were actual Republicans. Parenthetically, understood, Paul is more of a libertarian. But please tell your listeners that Susan Collins is no friend of ours, having actually originated the homegrown terrorism thought crime prevention bill up here. She's so close to Lieberman that as a constituent, I feel my senator is being occupied by the neocon APAC of lies. While she and Snow do occasionally act like they have a brain or a conscience or a sense of duty to we the people via upholding the Constitution, they both supported Alito, Mukasey, etc. Please help us out and don't further the common lie that she's some kind of moderate. Okay, she's a moderate serial killer enabler. We are somewhat blessed to have a strong progressive candidate running against her, Representative Tom Allen. But he's also apparently cowed by the same kind of threats that Representative Olvera of Massachusetts was relaying, saying he knows that the current coup has committed many impeachable offenses, yet impeachment is not a good idea. I write him constantly, and he sends back form letters saying the same patronizing lines makes me angry, but since I'm a peaceful supporter of the likes of Dennis Kucinich, I will try to educate Representative Allen as to just how big a fan of Hitler and Mussolini they really are. Meanwhile, please spread this great quote from Dennis Kucinich. Quote, I can win if you vote for me. End quote. Yes, indeed. One more here, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. Oh, the number here is 800-989-1480. This is from a blog, it's from one of the diaries at Daily Coast by Leaves on the Current, is the writer, Leaves on the Current. Leaves writes, there was a moment in last night's YouTube Republican debate that terrified me. No, it wasn't Romney's chilling equivocation on waterboarding. That was expected. And at least for this electoral cycle, thank God, the party still has John McCain's awesome moral clarity on that issue. Nor was it Tancredo's conflation of the U.S. armed forces with medieval Christian crusaders. After all, this guy doesn't have a chance any more than does Ron Paul, whose views on the Trilateral Commission reveal him to be only one missed day of meds shy of the reeking lunatics with hand-lettered signs who prowl Lafayette Square. No, what had me shaking with anger and fear tonight was the moment when the Constitution slipped into the abyss for good. And nobody, but nobody, in that auditorium appeared to notice that it has. Did you? I'm talking about the moment when an ordinary American, an all-too-typical American, held up a Bible and said, I write this from memory, but this was his meaning, quote, I'm going to ask you a question whose answer will tell us all we need to know about every one of you. Do you believe that every single word of this book is true? End quote. And Giuliani answered like a sensible Catholic. And Romney answered like a Mormon scared to admit to the Book of Mormon. And Huckabee answered like a good Baptist minister, a good pastoral answer balancing faith and reasoned understanding. And I looked up and realized that the Constitution had vanished because no one, not one candidate, not Anderson Cooper the moderator, not a single person in that packed and often raucous audience spoke the only possible constitutionally permissible answer, which comes from Article 6, no religious text shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. No religious test. None. Yet what we saw last night was a religious test, a crystal clear, absolutely open and direct violation of Article 6 of the Constitution. And no one in that room full of politicians and political experts and politically committed Americans had the courage to say so, or perhaps even the knowledge to recognize it for what it was. In that silence, we had to know the Constitution has died. And we cannot even see that it is gone. All right. It's 20 before the hour. Let's do some phone calls here, okay? Starting with Chet, who is calling from Chicago, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Chet.
Yeah, I second that motion from your last email. I had the exact same reaction. I was hoping and waiting that somebody would reach into their pocket and pull out a Constitution of the United States and say, every word in this book is true, and this is what I believe in, and this is what I stand on, and not one of them did.
Yeah.
And that, and you and he quoted the relevant part of the Constitution. There is no religious test, or your pun was instructive too, or text required.
Right.
I mean, this country was founded by people who had recently witnessed religious tyranny and oppression in the colonies, going back to the Salem witchcraft trials. They knew the danger religion represented when it was mixed with governmental power, and they didn't want that.
Right.
But the Republican Party seems to have regressed back to the 15th century.
You know, the part I cannot understand is how these Republican candidates, all of them, with the exception of Ron Paul, who's not a Republican, how the Republican candidates can maintain their absolute fidelity to the Christian Messiah and yet still advocate unrelenting murder and mayhem against people in the Middle East who are not Jewish. I can't get my mind around that. I mean the obvious. It's monumental hypocrisy. But how do they do that? How do they stand there and spout this blubbering, greasy form of perverted Christianity and at the same time talk about their determination to continue torture? Romney wants to what? Double the capacity at Guantanamo. How do they do that? Hello?
I'm listening.
No, no, it's a question, Chad.
Well, I think they do it because they've forgotten what's important.
Well, or they never knew. I guess the question was rhetorical. It just seems to me kind of asinine that people who claim to be Christian, what was it, Gandhi said, I like your Christ, I don't like your Christians. You know, that's the part that bothers me. Thanks, Chet. Appreciate you checking in. Mark is calling from Joplin, Missouri, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Mark.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes.
You caught me by surprise.
The
Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act, I've got a solution to take the onus off our emergency responders, you know, problems with the firefighters going in. They're there to look for people, not books,
right.
You know, not shrines.
Right.
Well, I'm a professional home inspector. My job is to perform the equivalent of a household cavity search.
Uh-huh.
And if there was just monetary compensation added as an amendment to Harmon's bill, then it would be a jobs program nationwide. It would be WPA with a twist, obviously. The only problem I have is that I've heard that Blackwater is now looking at a subsidiary home inspection company and also a house cleaning company and a painter company and a handyman company, an electrician company, a pest control company, interior decorator company. And, you know, they may lock up the market. So I'm not sure.
The possibilities here are endless, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, see, this is what Naomi Klein is talking about. This is a classic example of disaster capitalism. Because 9/11 occurred in this country, and whatever the cause and or effect was, one of the certain effects was to produce a whole new field of capitalism, the capitalism of surveillance, of spying, of going into people's homes. And as you just, the list you just went down there, my God, the possibilities are endless.
It almost worked for McCarthy.
I don't think he had the grand vision that people like Cheney and Bush and Bremer and Abrams and the rest of Negroponte, the rest of these monsters have. They have the grand vision. They have the the Mussolini neo-fascist vision of yes, by God, the trains will run on time. Everybody will have a good time as long as you don't become politically active. Just
or die prematurely of alcoholism, which McCarthy did in 57.
Which might be proof that there may be a God after all. Hey, thanks, Mark. Take care. Take care. We have a break here. We'll come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before. But the man there said the music wouldn't play. In the streets the children screamed, the lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken, and the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, they caught the last train for the coast. The day the music died, and they were
two, one, two, three, four.
Representatives of the government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, represented respective Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Mahmoud Abbas.
President Ehud Olmert. You gotta love it, right? Back to your phone calls. G is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. G, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Nice to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Okay, I'm calling you about basically the Declaration of Independence.
Uh-huh.
And I really strongly disagree with your whole take on the Declaration of Independence, and I do not want you to take this in a very personal manner. This is a totally philosophical difference.
All right, explain yourself.
Okay, to me, the Declaration of Independence is just one more instance of a long series of whiny, self-serving statements used to justify oppression. Even in the Declaration of Independence, which you read, towards the end, Jefferson states what? These horrible savages who are raping and pillaging and know nothing else but doing that.
Right.
It is basically a justification not for freedom, not for equality, but for the freedom to exploit. That's all it is. And if this is a basic underlying theme of the three Abrahamic religions, with Islam being the least, guilty of it. If you look at it, if you look at how the West was colonized, the poor pilgrims, sorry, the poor pioneers are going west just looking for land, and these savages attack them, you know, without any provocation. The poor Israelis were just going into the promised land, I don't know who promised it to them, and these savage Palestinians just attacked them. And also the very language which is used. I mean, the people in Iraq are not insurgents. Insurgency is a revolt against established authority. They are resistance members, which is a revolt against an occupying authority. Things should be called the way they are. And again, if you look at the Declaration of Independence, I mean, instead of looking at the Declaration of Independence, why don't you look at the founding principles of a country like South Africa under Mandela or India? Look at what Nehru, when he was asked, what was more difficult to you than getting independence? He said, finding the way to create a just state by just means. You have to remember that India was under the Muslims for 700 years, under the British for 200 years, finally we got our independence, and what did we do? We didn't oppress the Muslims. We didn't kill the British. In fact, there are more Muslims in India than in Pakistan. Pakistan attacked India 3 times. India won all 3 battles and never took an inch of land.
I certainly respect your opinion here, and I agree with what you're saying about the exploitation of what was referred to by Native Americans as Turtle Island. However, in listening to you, all of a sudden I see a major flaw in what you're saying. When India was granted or declared its independence, the Hindu majority was not very patient with the Muslim minority at all. As a matter of fact, the slaughter began.
That is not true. The partition was created by the British and Muhammad Ali Jinnah for the sake of creating a theocratic state called Pakistan, which the West could control. And in fact,
I'll defer to you because... I will defer to your interpretation of the history of the establishment of India coming out from under the Raj, but only because I am an ignorant American who does not understand. I'm culturally ignorant. I am racially ignorant. I am certainly historically ignorant. I have been laboring under the impression for quite some time that Pakistan and East Pakistan, which eventually became Bangladesh, were established because the Muslims and the Hindus otherwise, at that time, in 1947, 1948, would have turned the rivers in India into rivers of blood. But again, I plead... the cultural, racial, and national ignorance that I, as a white American male, must. It's a burden under which I have to exist. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't have the knowledge or the insight or the overarching overview that you seem to have. I started the reading of the Declaration of Independence, the American Declaration of Independence tonight, by saying for a brief moment, if we can step outside of what we all understand is the truth of what happened in what became the United States over the next 200 years. I even went so far as to say that people of color in this country were not granted de jure, or I'm sorry, legal equality until little bits and pieces into the 60s. Women were not guaranteed suffrage until 1920, and on and on and on. I thought I made that clear. What I was referring to was the spirit and intensity of the document, and not what might have been the ulterior motives, as you ascribe to these men, of the founders, that they were determined first and foremost to begin the butchery of those they called the Indian savages, as they took their, the white people took their land away. I thought for a brief moment we could step outside of that and take a look at the document, but apparently that brief moment has come and gone. But thanks, G. I appreciate your phone call. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Like a drunk in a midnight choir.
have tried in my way to be free. Like a fish on a hook.
Like a fish on a hook.
Like a knife.
Like a night from an old-fashioned book. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. One more thing I got to share with you, because I found this very interesting. This is from TalkingPointsMemo.com, and it has to do with the attention the whorish Main Street media paid to the bogus internet poll the other day showing Hillary losing to Republicans. And at the same time, the whorish mainstream media ignored a reputable poll that found the opposite. A couple of people brought this up on the program the other night, and I didn't pay all that much attention to it. I believe the poll is from 2 or 3 days ago. But the writer at TalkingPointsMemo.com says, ladies and gentlemen, a tale of two polls yesterday, referring to Tuesday, I think. Two polling firms, Zogby and Gallup, released surveys of the presidential race that offered strikingly different conclusions. The Zogby poll found that Hillary is trailing 5 leading Republican candidates in general election matchups. The Gallup poll, by contrast, found that Hillary, and to a lesser degree Obama, has a slight to sizable lead over the top GOP contenders. A couple of other things that distinguish these two polls. The Zogby one is an online poll. That's not a poll. A notoriously unreliable method. While the Gallup is a telephone poll. And as Charles Franklin of Pollster.com observed yesterday, the Zogby poll is completely out of sync with multiple other national polls finding Hillary with a lead over the Republican candidates. The Zogby poll actually found that Mike Huckabee is leading Hillary in a national matchup. The Gallup findings were in line with most other surveys. I don't need to tell you which poll got all the media attention, do I? The Zogby survey was covered repeatedly on CNN, earned coverage on MSNBC, Fox News, and Reuters, and was covered by multiple other smaller outlets. By contrast, I can't find a single example of any reporter or commentator on the major networks or news outlets referring to the Gallup poll at all, with the lone exception of UPI. While the Zogby poll was mentioned by multiple reporters and pundits, the only mention the Gallup poll got on TV were from Hillary advisors who had to bring it up themselves on the air in order to inject it into the conversation. You could argue that the Zogby poll got all the coverage it did precisely because it is out of sync with multiple other polls, and thus is news. But the truth is, the reporters and editors at the major networks know full well that the Zogby poll is bunk, yet they breathlessly covered it anyway. Worse, the Zogby poll was covered with few mentions either of its dubious methodology or of the degree to which its findings don't jibe with other surveys. Bottom line, the Zogby poll was considered big news because many in the political press are heavily invested in the Hillary is unelectable narrative for all kinds of reasons that have little to do with the desire to, you know, practice journalism. Really? Yeah, that's what I said the other night. Sometimes I feel like I'm on the verge, like I'm being pushed into supporting, if not supporting, at least defending the Clinton campaign. But online poll? I had no idea the Zogby poll was online. Stop! An online poll? They are notorious for attracting all the right-wing mouth breathers. Hey, go over her. They got a poll. Quick, let's go over there and freep it. Of course, I don't use the word freep. But I had no idea. I heard that story, too, and I thought, this can't be true. It can't be. Hillary Clinton has the backing. Did you see that Robert Kennedy Jr. has endorsed her now? I think that just came out to tonight, that news, or today. Online polls are about as reliable as any survey that starts by being self-selecting. I mean, people who stumble across this poll or who are not scientifically categorized in order to include a margin for error. There are all sorts of variables that have to be considered. There are all sorts of, what's the opposite of variable? Givens? Is all sorts of givens that has to be that have to be considered. And then the poll is conducted. The manner in which the question is asked has to be considered. You don't do that with an online poll. Just for the hell of it, I sit there. I can't tell you how many times a day I'll see an AOL poll or a, whatever, CNN poll, MSNBC poll, and I look at it and go, yeah, hell yeah, I think he's a real son of a bitch. And I'll click the hole that says, he's a real son of a bitch. Of course, they don't put it that way, but you know what I'm saying. Oh, bat squeeze. Okay, back to some phone calls here. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening on the internet. Hey, Edie.
Oh, hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm okay. I can't believe you're wasting your precious breath and your wonderful voice on these cotton-picking polls.
They get my attention. The reason I do, Edie, is because of what I said. You know, mainstream media pretends like these things are important, especially online polls. Give me a break.
It's just another little gimmick to try to steer people the way they want them to go.
There you go.
And, I mean, it's God, please. I hope that most of us are smarter than that by now. I mean, I know it's a dim hope, and at times like this, I wish I could pray. But if you don't mind me going off topic for a second.
No, go ahead. There's no topic on this program.
Okay. I've seen a couple of stories on the news hour the last couple of nights about manufacturing returning to the Rust Belt. And apparently some of these businessmen have decided that, well, gee, it'd be a good idea to have some good things made in America.
Mm-hmm.
And they're opening up shops, and they're really trying, and they're teaching these kids. There's no young people around because everybody figured they heard the death knell and they moved on to something else. So in the public schools there, kids that can't or don't want to go to college are encouraged to, consider manufacturing. And it's automobile parts, it's just all kinds of things. And it's popping up. The main thing they talked about tonight was, and last night really, was Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And it showed how derelict the buildings were, like Slits is now an office park and...
Mm-hmm.
Apps of ruin, and I just can't give you the detail, but I'm going to check it out myself more on the internet because I think it's a hopeful sign. And they use the Mark Twain line that, you know, the reports of their death was exaggerated.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, there's people trying to come back. That great guy, Paul Salmon, I think his name is. He's a economist. Economist, and he can talk these things. I've seen him on. He used to be on ABC now and then on Nightline, and he can talk about these things, and you don't feel like an idiot.
Paul Krugman.
No, I know who Paul Krugman is.
I know somebody else.
This guy's name. I'm not even sure if his first name is Paul, but I think his last name is Solomon, and he used to be on Nightline once in a while. It's always about economics, and he has a way of talking you through it to where.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't sound like he's talking down to you, but, you know, I wasn't good in math. But I just got kind of revved up about the Rust Belt coming back to life.
Well, one can hope. The Rust Belt is my home.
I know.
You know, Toledo, Ohio. And, of course, when I grew up there, it wasn't the Rust Belt at all. It was the engine that drove the economic recovery from the Depression. It was the engine that drove America's victories in the Pacific and in Europe during World War II. It was everything.
I know, and one of the things I still like about the NewsHour, although I miss the old gang and Robert McNeil from before, but they still now and then come up with a story like this that's really relevant and means something to people.
I hear you. Yeah, that's...
pass it on. And oh, by the way, if you didn't see Oberman at 8, tape him or catch him at midnight in your time.
Yeah. I usually catch him when we go off the air here. I switch over to MSNBC and see the first half hour.
It's a really good one tonight, Mike.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks. All right, good.
Thank you, dear.
All right, thanks, Edie. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll be back in a moment. Oh, here it is. Thanks, Eleanor. It's variables and constants. variables and constants. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Fully understand those who say you can't win this thing militarily. That's exactly what the United States military says, that you can't win this military.
Well, isn't that a clue then, Chuckle Nuts? Oh, well. Kathy in Green Bay writes in regarding what I said about Zogby and Gallup. Subject line, Zogby's online poll is much more scientific. Kathy writes, Mike, this isn't a poll that one stumbles across. One has to register with Zogby, and then one is contacted when Zogby needs to poll on something. There are all sorts of demographic questions, and I'd bet that there's an internal method to determine if a participant answers the same question the same way for different polls. I suspect one is no more likely to lie online about such things as age, gender, etc., than one is over the phone. In short, Mike, there are lots and lots of controls in this poll. This isn't an AOL or an MSN poll, and I'm reasonably certain that a pollster of the caliber and reputation of John Zogby wouldn't jeopardize his excellent reputation by putting out bogus poll numbers. Yada, yada. Kathy, P.S. Yep, I signed up when they first got started, and I've done lots and lots of polls for Zogby. Okay. Fair enough. I guess I just misunderstood. Well, I don't guess I did. Obviously, I misunderstood. I thought the Zogby poll was just one of those like you stumble across when you open, those of you who still do, and I still do, shame on me, open AOL every morning and get all the news of Hollywood and places like that, right? Okay, thanks, Kathy. I appreciate the correction. Okay, where are we? Oh, that's right. It's a talk radio program. We're taking calls. Bob the Poet is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Mike. Say, you remember back in the 60s, the Fifth Dimension sang the Declaration of Independence?
No, I don't remember that at all. Of course, there's a lot of stuff that I don't remember about the 60s.
You must have been there.
I was there. That's why I have very few memories of... last clear memory I have was sometime in 1960, and then I came out of the ether in 63 when Kennedy was assassinated, and then went back into the ether, and I think came out of it... I think Kent State brought me out of it, but just it's all just a rainbow-colored splash of sensory deprivation, if you know what I mean. Well, that too.
I've been rather masochistically reading Armed Madhouse, and I ran across a sentence. Greg Palast says, Jimmy Carter once said, America deserves a government as good as its people.
Uh-oh.
Unfortunately, that's what we got, according to Greg. And I... can't read this book too much at the time. It just really is upsetting. And I reflected upon that for a while, and I thought about the liar in chief.
Uh-huh.
And I wondered, do we deserve him? And I thought about our culture. And we lie to our children, don't we? We start with our children. Baby talk that's not language. Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy. Then we teach them about a snake who talked, a virgin birth, and a ladder to heaven, dead man that brought back to life. We look around our culture, and we know advertising, PR firms, how they lie. you reward the biggest liars that we have, our actors and actresses. We reward them grandly. Politicians, we expect to lie and accept that. Everybody just is a cliche. Labor and management get together, and labor asks for twice as much as what they'll settle for. Management offers half as much as what they'll settle for. They start out with lies. People lie on their taxes, lie about their age. Even cosmetics lie about how we look, dye our hair. Editing on television. What's really wrong with television is that it's been perverted. It's like having to fax things instead of talk to you on the telephone where it's live. You can hear my voice. Talk about ghosts, witches. You know about the tobacco companies, the drug war, racism, all the lies told about races in this country. We're a nation of liars. I think maybe we do deserve the liar in chief.
Well,
you know about the government lies. They lie about unemployment, the economy, WMDs. Spinmeister is a profession. My goodness, swift boats? Yeah, we're bringing democracy to Iraq? Come on. Do we maybe deserve the liar in chief? And that's not even talking about the lies of omission. We can't see the pictures of the war, the coffins coming home. We got to start talking some truth. It's why I'm a truth seeker, why I listen to you, Mike.
I hear you loud and clear. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
You freaking liar.
The world has changed after September the 11th. It's changed because we're no longer safe.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb.
Nuclear weapon.
Nuclear weapon.
Nuclear weapon.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, I have a sincere request here from Ingrid. She writes, Mike, please consider this sincere request from one of your longtime fans in Atlanta who has met you once in an ACLU luncheon. Please do not speak in such negative tones about Catholics and their beliefs. I know I don't have to tell you that there are many Catholics who put themselves on the line for justice and peace. Father Louis Vitale is in prison right now for the umpteenth time for challenging the military-industrial complex. I just spent a weekend at Fort Benning with nuns who spent time in federal prison for opposing the School of the Americas torture school. I attend an integrated Catholic church across the street from the Martin Luther King Center. In spite of our many flaws, we strive to lead lives congruent with the tenets of our faith and elevate Dr. King as a modern saint to emulate. Henry Hyde does not speak for me. If you must speak of him and others of his ilk as Catholics, then please also mention Fathers Roy Bourgeois, Dan Berrigan, Louis Vitale, Bob Cushing, and John Deere. Then there is Sister Betty McKenzie. And from the Atlanta area, Mike Vosburgh Casey and the late Bill Corrigan. I know you get it, so I won't go on and on. I respect you. Please consider this when you make your comments. Ingrid. Ingrid, with all due respect, I don't think you listen closely enough. You're probably busy, as we all are. I always make a distinction. Invariably, I make a distinction. I was talking about Father Bourgeois last week or a few days ago. I always make the distinction about Catholic lay workers, about Catholics who the liberation theologists who have been beaten into a pulp by the Church of Rome, by the leadership of your church. Liberation theologists who tell people, no, it's not pie in the sky and the sweet by and by after you die. It's right now. Get your act together. Overthrow this repressive right-wing Catholic Church-backed government and seize what is yours. On the other hand, Ingrid, the people you mentioned, I wonder sometimes if their morality and ethical behavior is a byproduct of their Catholicism, or if their Catholicism is a byproduct of their natural inclination to do just acts. In other words, what I'm getting at in an oblique, kind of fuzzy way is, you don't have to be a Catholic to be in favor of social justice. You don't have to be a Jew. You don't have to be a Muslim. As a matter of fact, in my honest opinion, for most people, not necessarily those you mentioned, but for most people, hardcore religious dogma gets in the way of acts of social justice, charity, love, kindness. Why? Because most religions are loaded with the strictures that tell people to accept their lot, especially Catholicism, especially the Catholicism that was used to subjugate how many hundreds of millions of people over the years. Accept your lot. Be quiet. Go to church and pray. You'll get your reward after you're dead. So, I understand your point. I hope you will understand my point. I am an atheist. I think all religion is ultimately detrimental. All religion. That is supernatural in its basis. Because all of those religions are, in my opinion, are based on a reward system that in turn is based on a human being's not understanding his or her own mortality and therefore fearing it. I am an atheist, Ingrid. I don't believe any of this. And what I have in any religion, and what I've found over the course of my life, that some of the most vicious acts have been committed by people who were subscribers to a certain religious faith. Now, the answer back to that from a lot of people is, well, what about Stalin? He was an atheist. Nah, I don't think so. What about Mao? He was an atheist. I don't think so. I think these people subscribed to religions, they just didn't tout them. It wasn't Stalin that referred to religion as being the opiate of the masses. So anyway, I respect your letter. I'm glad you wrote, Ingrid. But I will pretty much persist in what I do. I understand that there are people who happen to be Catholics, who happen to be Jews, who happen to be Protestants, who happen to be Muslims, who do great works. But my theory has always been, and I'm starting to repeat myself now, that they do those great works not as a consequence of their religion, but it's a consequence of who they are. Religion may factor into it, but I think other factors play a more important role. How they were raised, what they perceived to be justice, decency, integrity, honor, love. But I'm glad you wrote. Back to your phone calls. Alvin is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening on the internet. Hey, Alvin.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Just fine, Mike. I hope you indulge me a little bit. You know how much I value being able to listen to your opinion and just listen to you over the years, always since Chicago.
Wow.
I was a little taken aback, though. I was enjoying some of the intellect of your caller, the other minority that called in earlier tonight, and you kind of lost patience with the guy, and seemed like you did the Rush Limbaugh thing on him where you started.
Wait. You have to be very careful when you start comparing me to Rush Limbaugh, because I may hang up on your ass, okay? All right, that's A. B, what are you talking about? Are you talking about the guy who called in with a heavy accent?
Exactly.
Who started busting up on me because of a G, I think his name was. Wouldn't even get his name. Started busting up on me because of my reading of the Declaration of Independence. Now, you know, I can't accommodate a person's ignorance. I made a statement, a very clear statement, before I started reading the Declaration of Independence, that I understand what the white founders of this country were about, and subsequent to the founding of this country, what they did. What I said was, twice, before I started reading the document and after I allowed that man to continue to talk to me and explain to me my abysmal white male American imperialist ignorance, I said, aside from all of that, what I was addressing was the power and the spirit of that document. And then, the man had the, the presence, if you want to call it that, to tell me that I'm wrong about the Muslim-Hindu bloodbath that occurred when the Brits pulled out of India. So be careful, Alvin, when you compare me to Limbaugh, because that will thoroughly piss me off and make me move on to another caller. Fair enough?
The part I was talking about, Mike,
yeah,
was the tactic of talking to him as if he was still on the line when he was gone.
No, no, I didn't talk to him as if he were still on the line when he was gone. I don't ever do that. I may make comments afterwards, but people know when they're gone. I don't know what you mean.
I was still kind of like Limbaugh does. You expecting the guy to come back after you explain maybe a different point that you have from
I went to a break. Look, Alvin, I'll tell you what. I appreciate what you're saying here, but I'm in no mood to defend myself tonight. Okay, so I'm going to let you go, pal. I appreciate what you had to say. I hope you call in again, but I'm in no mood to defend myself against the charges that I'm treated the guy like Limbaugh, or that there was something weird in the way I handled that phone call. I don't mind being lectured, but as a matter of fact, I probably take more of it than any other talk show host in the country, maybe because I'm the stupidest of all the talk show hosts. But I'll tell you what, people that lecture me on my position on religion or my position on politics or if I get something wrong, that's one thing. But when somebody starts to say, like G did, the subtext of his message was, I didn't know what the hell I'm talking about. That I was, in reading the Declaration of Independence, that I was somehow enforcing or endorsing imperialism. And I'll be goddamned if that's what I was doing. And I make that clear. I make that clear every night on this program. So if somebody like G calls up and wants to spout off, I let him spout off until I've had enough. And then, rather than hanging up on him, I just gently take him off the line, make a few more comments, and then go to a break or go to another call. But I don't know what you're expecting me to do, Alvin, but when somebody pretty much straight up starts telling me I don't know what I'm talking about, A or B, that because I'm quoting the Declaration of Independence, I am not aware that I'm quoting a document that fostered imperialism or racism or genocide, then I get pissed off. I understand what these founders, the framers of this country, were about. I talk about it all the time. I haven't gone through an Independence Day, July 4th, in 24 years of doing radio without acknowledging that. So, if somebody like G or anyone else wants to call me up and lecture me about my reading of the Declaration of Independence, I have two words: don't. And as far as being told that, I did a limbo on him, nuh-uh, Alvin, that's a little bit too far for me this late in the program, this late at night, without your getting this kind of a reaction from me. You understand what I'm saying? I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. Because comparing me to Limbaugh is like comparing me to some drug-addled, drug-pushing, slobbish, lying son of a bitch who hates this country, who hates everything about us. That's not a good thing to do, Alvin. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. without consent of our legislature. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. Well, that was fun. I'm being haunted. 9 minutes before the hour.
I was born like this. I had no choice.
Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. He also handled your phone calls. Billy Foster, who does just about everything else for this network, and Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, along with our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Well, I feel like I should just apologize to everybody for saying bad things to G and then getting testy with Alvin.
Well, you can start with me, because I'll tell you what, you did not take those dishes out of the dishwasher when you said you would, and there's still laundry up there.
Yeah, well. All right, Marge is calling from Indiana. Marge, welcome to the program. Hey, Marge.
Good evening, Michael. You're not emptying the dishwasher, is that it?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Oh, shucks. Before I go on to what I really called for, should we have a brief moment of silence for the self-proclaimed champion of the rule of law who accused William Jefferson Clinton of violating the integrity of his office? And when he was asked why he diddled another man's wife, chalked it up to a youthful indiscretion at the age of 45?
Do I have a second choice?
You know, there was something that I hadn't seen until tonight when they were reliving his life. John Calloway on Channel 11, the PBS station, had a recorded interview of him with Henry, and he asked him the same question. And Henry's response was, I just saw it tonight and heard it, that had I known, no, I won't dignify that question. And had I known that you were going to ask it, I wouldn't have come here tonight. You like that? Chicken Little.
Yeah.
Oh. What's really got my teeth set on edge.
Okay, what?
There was an article in my local paper yesterday, Associated Press.
Yeah.
U.S. officials have voiced concerns about such funds secrecy in the past. They're talking about the fact that a sovereign fund from Abu Dhabi has bailed out Citigroup to the tune of $7.5 billion.
Yes.
Later on in the article, it talks about the issue is likely to grow. Merrill Lynch estimates the total assets managed by sovereign funds already may exceed, you sitting down, $2 trillion.
Well, those are just numbers. You know, we talked about this the other night, Marge, and here's the interesting part on the the Abu Dhabi Citigroup thing. A Citigroup is going to pay 11% interest on that money. It's called sovereign funds now when the government reaches into their hedge fund and starts running businesses reaches in the reserve fund. But there was a time when that was referred to as communism, wasn't it?
Hedge funds are not regulated.
Right. Well,
nobody knows who the hell runs them or what they're about.
I don't think anything's regulated anymore. We still have the regulations on the books.
You have a point there. You know, when I'm reading this, you know, that toward the end it says China. Besides the Gulf countries, China is to fund the growing budget deficit by purchasing vast amounts of U.S. Treasury securities, propping up the value of the ailing dollar. The dollar against the euro is dropping like a damn rock.
It is indeed.
And, you know, it scares the hell out of me. You know, when I read this, how long has it been since the people actually got a little bit upset when Abu Dhabi, it was Dubai, that was supposed to take over the security of the U.S. port. You know, I'm wondering if they divulged into a sovereign fund and came up with another name, and they're still doing it.
I'll tell you what, Marge.
Yeah.
You've got to do what we here at the Malloy compound have done.
Yeah.
First of all, arm yourself. But secondly,
buy a bottle of Jack Daniel's?
No, put in many, many cans of tuna and Dinty Moore beef stew.
I hate Dinty Moore.
Well, I do too, but all right. Then
Chunky soup, maybe?
There you go. So that when the Chinese call, all these notes due, and the dollar drops to the point where euros are worth $2.50 American. They're up to what, $1.40 now. There used to be 92 cents.
Yeah.
And when the Canadian dollar finally gets to the point where it's worth $1.50 of American dollars, that's the time to start cracking open your cans of tuna fish, because by then, Marge, it's going to be like almost all over. Except the shouting and the cheering.
God, these people are... it was funny when they used to say, when they came out with the show, the damn Yankees was all one word.
Right.
I'll tell you, my vocabulary has come to... Greedy bastards is all one word.
It is indeed. Marge, we're flat out of time. Thank you, dear heart. Behave yourself. And check in again. I'll see y'all tomorrow night. Thank God it's Friday, right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.